is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Now, Rick having some connection issues, so he will be on with us in just a moment. But we wait for no one as Chris and I are ready to start you on your Monday morning. Good morning, Chris Canty. How are you?
I'm doing well, Dave. I hope you're doing well also. But quick question. I thought Rick was supposed to be an IT guru now. What happened with that?
Yeah, well, remember, he was the IT guru, and then he said he's not involved at all in IT. So I'm not sure he knows what he wants, which sounds like typical Rick. And apparently, whatever issues he's having, he can't connect. He can't fix them if, in fact, he is the IT guru that he claims to be.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be hacking anybody's computer anytime soon. But I'm doing good today, Dave. I had an awesome holiday weekend. Did a little bit of everything. I went fishing with Dad, and all we really caught was the breeze. My dad said that the fish were social distancing, so we'll see how that works out moving forward. But I got on the grill, took a dip in the pool, shot some fireworks off the dock on Saturday with my neighbors. That was pretty cool. So it was pretty awesome.
So you did
weekend,
it all this
man.
Weekend. Was there any golfing this weekend?
There was some golf Saturday morning. We had a 7:30 tee time to beat the heat, but we did play some golf. Although I don't know if you could call what my dad and I did golfing the way that we played.
So you golfed? You fished, you swam, you barbecued, you lit off some fireworks, safely, I imagine. You had a pretty good weekend.
It was an awesome weekend, Dave. How was yours?
It was good. I saw the two sides of like social distancing and how people react. So we went to two barbecues this weekend. One on Saturday, very small crowds, one on Saturday. And it got to the point, Chris, where the person, I tried to separate my seat. And somebody just kept moving their seat closer to mine to where I finally had to say, excuse me, can we keep a 6-foot distance here? And I was like, oh, okay, I didn't know you were doing that thing. And I was like, yes, I'm doing that thing. Doing that thing. And then I went to one last night where the people we went to literally would not get within 20 feet of us and were wearing masks. So I saw both ends of the spectrum. But yes, a lot of eating, a lot of grilling, a lot of barbecuing. Eventually, a lot of social distancing, but a very nice weekend. But, now, but you Dave, saw both ends of the spectrum this week, Chris, I tell you.
Yeah, we got it all covered. Now, when you were at the first barbecue, after you were eating, did you put on a mask or you just decided to stay 6 feet away?
I feel, and I don't know if this is right, and Rick's going to join us in a second. I feel like when I'm more than 6 feet away that I can go without a mask. But when I'm within that 6-foot barrier that the mask needs to be on. So I kept saying, and I'm telling you, it was unbelievable. We said good morning to Rick. Rick, I'm at a barbecue with about 8 people, and there's a huge backyard, and the one guy just continued to scooch his chair next to mine over and over and over all night to when I finally had to say, excuse me, can we please keep 6 feet between us?
Habitual line stepper. I mean, you got to watch out for that guy.
Oh,
what's probably wrong with a Patriots people? Fan.
That's what they're dealing with in baseball, though, too, Dave. I mean, I've heard a couple different stories where, depending on the guy, I mean, there are some guys that will social distance. I was just listening to, you know, the opposite ends of the spectrum, the one guy that wanted to sit close to you and the other ones that wouldn't go near you. It's the same thing in Major League Baseball. Depending on where you're from, there are some guys that are doing all the right things, wearing the mask, social distancing, and the other guys looking at them going, what are you guys doing? Why are you guys taking this thing so serious?
So serious. I don't understand. I cannot comprehend, Rick, why there are people out there that think, why are you taking this thing so serious?
It's hard to comprehend. And maybe that's just, I mean, again, it depends on where you're from, what state you live in. I mean, we're in the epicenter of this thing. I mean, we experienced this firsthand. When you turn on the news and you see, you know, people being taken out in body bags because there's no place to put them. I mean, that's a stark reality how serious this thing is, as opposed to some of these states that, you know, it's business as usual. Like, there's nothing going on around you. So, I listen, I don't know how it's possible, but, I mean, the reality is that's what this country is dealing with right now.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. So, before we get to baseball, we will, and the Yankees and Tanaka, and there's a statement from the Nationals I'll read in just a moment. How was your weekend, Rick?
Weekend was all right. I didn't do any barbecues. We stayed up, obviously, you know my wife. We stayed home. Did some steak. Bonsai the kids' faces off yesterday. Got this blow up like slide / water park situation, which turned into like a UFC event because, you know, Milo can't control himself. So we had bloody noses. We had, you know, fat lips. A bit of a mess. But I mean, all in all, okay. Weather was good. No complaints.
All right. Very nice.
Except for, oh, by the way, too. Again. So I get an email, okay? A no fireworks email. Which I laughed at. I'm like, okay, people are going to have fireworks, which is fine. I have no problem.
You get an email from who? Like the town?
The village. Yeah, the village sends an email. Like, we would prefer you not, you know, set off fireworks. Which I'm like, people are going to set off fireworks, no big deal. I have no problem with fireworks. Except that now you take it to the next level where at 1 o'clock in the morning, you're just, that's when, you know, we're going to do the grand finale at 1 a.m. And it's bang, bang, bang. And of course, I mean, wakes the kids up. I mean, we can't get the finale bang, done. Bang, bang. We can't get the finale done by like, you know, 10-ish. We got to wait till 1 a.m.
What's the difference for you between 10 and 1 anyway?
Well, there is no difference. I mean, I'm well into my sleep. It's the kids that I'm worried about. I mean, because now the kids are up. So the kids are in our room because they're all nervous. They're upset. So it's a fiasco. It's a debacle, Dave.
Yeah. Well, been a lot of fireworks lately, that's for sure. A
lot of fireworks.
Yeah.
A lot of fireworks. This 2020, man. Yeah. I mean,
we're halfway through.
No, I mean, it's not going fast enough.
No, we gotta get through this thing. It's winning, Uncle, right? All right. So let's get into the Yankees. Chris, I can only imagine what you were like upon seeing the video of Tanaka getting plunked in the head off the line drive of Giancarlo Stanton. You must have had a heart attack.
Yeah, I mean, that's scary stuff, Dave. I mean, first of all, your thoughts with the player just to make sure that he's healthy. You don't even think about the implications for your team. You just wonder about Masahiro Tanaka's health. But it seems like everything checked out at the hospital on Saturday, and they had him listed as being in the concussion protocol, and they'll monitor him, but they expect that he'll be back sooner rather than later. But, I mean, you heard about the reaction from all of the Yankees players, Giancarlo Stanton included. Like, as soon as he hit that line drive, which was, what, 112 miles an hour off the bat?
Terrifying.
As soon as he hit it, like, he crouched down because, you know, he knew exactly what had happened, and he'd already lived that movie when he played for the Marlins, and he was hit by Mike Fiers. So it's a scary scene, and that's one of those things that when you jump straight into those live competition simulated games and you don't have the protection of an L screen – something like that could happen just because a player doesn't necessarily have his bearings about him. He doesn't react quick enough to be able to defend himself. And it feels like that's the situation that played out over this weekend with Tanaka. So you just hope that he gets better. You saw the other pitchers, James Paxton and Jordan Montgomery, take the precautions and have the L screen there with their workouts throughout the weekend. But that's one of those things that you worried about, especially when you try to get things ramped up in a short period of time, because you're talking about the regular season being, what, 2 weeks from now kicking off? So it's one of those scary things. You hope that this doesn't happen. The odds say that it probably won't happen again to any of their other pitchers. But it's just a really scary scene, Dave.
Can I ask a silly question? I don't know if you guys – I've seen the video, I mean, about 100 times.
Yeah.
Was it – I the only one that thought it was weird that the first reaction was to go down on your knees in the batter's box and no one ran out to knock on the mound immediately?
Yeah. Yeah.
It just seemed weird to me. If I had a screaming line drive off my pitcher's head, my first reaction would probably be to run and make sure he's okay.
Well, he was just so upset because as Chris mentioned, he's the guy that gets it the most. But it was strange that I don't know who the catcher even was, but
it looked like Higashioka.
He just kind of wandered around the batter's box for a few seconds. Like, I saw a good portion of the video. No one even approached Tanaka after that happened.
I wonder if that's like just because everyone's kind of like in a weird spot with social distancing and everything else.
And I think it's also shocking. Like, that kind of thing just terrifying and shocking. You almost, you know, it's almost like a car accident. You don't exactly know how to react after something like that has happened.
Exactly.
No, I agree with you. I just thought it was weird. I mean, my initial reaction would be like, just go make sure he's okay. I mean, that's a screaming line drive off his head. But I mean,
he's lucky though, man. I mean,
very lucky.
If that hits him in the face.
In the temple. Yeah.
Oh.
It's a different story.
I mean, 112 miles an hour. That is terrifying. Do you remember it was in Fenway Park?
Yeah, the Boston pitcher?
I think it was Bryce Flory. Ryan Thompson hit the line drive. I think he had multiple surgeries. He was bloodied and battered and broken. It was one of the worst things I've ever seen. I mean, it's unbelievably dangerous, the line drive back to the pitcher.
Yeah, the line drive. I mean, you barely have any time to react.
Well, you have no time to react.
None. And of course, I mean, just with the way the world is going right now, of course that happens. You're a couple days into summer camp, and that's the first thing. You know what I mean? That's, you got Masahiro Tanaka taking a line drive off the head. But I mean, just in general, I mean, outside of that, baseball, I mean, right now is a hot mess, man.
It almost feels like it couldn't be worse. It
doesn't feel like it. Have you seen the statement from Mike Rizzo?
Yeah, I was going to get into that in a second. Yeah.
I mean, what are we doing? You spend all this time arguing over money. You figure you'd have the, like, I mean, the safety protocol is somewhat ironed out, but apparently they don't. This is a mess.
It is a mess. And now Mike Trout, and I don't blame him, but Mike Trout says he's not sure what he's going to do. I mean, if you start to get the likes of Mike Trout and big players like that, the whole season loses its feel, at least for me. And I'm not saying I blame him for potentially not playing, but it changes the complexion of the season in my mind.
No, it certainly does, Dave, because there is no bigger name in the sport than Mike Trout. I mean, he's the best player in baseball. He's an all-time great generational talent. But I guess when you start talking about being able to pull off this season and execute, you know, the safety protocols and the preventative measures to keep guys as safe as possible. I mean, when you have guys reporting to camp and they still don't have the results of their in-tech testing several days later, that's a problem. Like what we saw with Sean Doolittle in the Washington Nationals, like that's a problem when he says that he did the intake testing and days later he still doesn't have the results. It's hard for players to have confidence that you're doing everything that's necessary in order to keep them safe. And so when you start having things like that happen, it chips away at the credibility of all the measures that you put in place. And again, it sounds like from a lot of the guys that are in camps right now that they're on the fence about it. And if you have a few things go wrong, then I think you'll see a lot of guys decide to opt out. I mean, we saw Felix Hernandez and David Price decide to opt out this weekend, didn't we?
Yep.
So, I mean, I don't think that those will be the last guys based on how things have gone on early. Now, with any kind of new wrinkle, any type of new innovation, implementation of that at the beginning is going to be tough, right? Because it's new. So you think that there will be a few kinks, but with something like COVID-19, when it comes to the health and safety of the players, I just feel like this is one of those things that you had to have down cold before you even started to allow players to come back to ballparks. And clearly, that's not where MLB was in terms of making sure that all of that stuff was buttoned up.
Well, you talk about that. Here's the statement, Rick. You mentioned the Nationals. This is from their GM, Mike Rizzo. Per MLB's protocol, all players and staff were tested for COVID-19 Friday, July 3rd. 72 hours later, we still have yet, this is amazing to me, still have yet to receive the results of those tests. We cannot have our players and staff working at risk. Therefore, we've canceled our team workout scheduled for this morning. We will not sacrifice the health and safety of our players, staff, and their families without accurate and timely testing. It is simply not safe for us to continue with summer camp. Major League Baseball needs to work quickly to resolve issues with their process and their lab. Otherwise, summer camp and the 2020 season are at risk. How can you not have this streamlined, where you take the test and within 24 hours you have the answer?
Well, that's the question too. And yeah, Sean Doolittle, I mean, doesn't know what his test is. I mean, he gets tested on a Friday. He's allowed to, you know, work out and everything else, not even knowing if he's negative or positive, and then gets another test on Sunday and still doesn't have his results from Friday. And then, I mean, you have testers not even show up. You got the players actually giving themselves saliva tests and sending them out to the lab, which you have a partner. And that was the one selling point I thought, you know, headed into this, was they have that partnership with the lab that does their PED testing. So it seemed like they would be able to, you know what I mean, as far as, you know, how many tests were available for the public and everything else, they actually had their own lab, which would make this, I guess, in theory, be a more seamless process than it is.
You thought so?
Well, you thought so. I mean, just look at, I mean, when you listen to Malika Andrews, who's down to the bubble in the NBA, and the amount of testing that she's doing, and the quarantine and everything else, when you see the, I mean, if you get a chance, and we'll talk about this today, I mean, the list of guidelines and protocols for the NHL when they get into their bubble, and how the testing is going to work and everything else. And then you see what's going on with Major League Baseball. It's especially, and it's not a bubble situation. You got guys golfing. You know, I'm watching the Booms this morning. He runs an assessment as golfing over the weekend. I mean, it doesn't give you much optimism. It does not leave me with much optimism that this is going to work with Major League Baseball.
Yeah. Well, think about it. You've got to trust what? You're talking about trusting 600 guys to do the right thing? Well over,
yeah,
600.
If, I mean, if not more, right? What are we looking at? 30 players for 30 teams? So you're looking at 900,
yeah, well
really?
Over, yeah, exactly. Well over 600 guys. Well, they're going to cut down rosters to 26, what, a few weeks in? So, I mean, you're talking about trusting a lot of guys to do the right thing, and that's, I mean, we know that that's a tough ask. I mean, you're going to have varying opinions on it. I mean, we can't even get everybody to agree on the consensus on whether or not they should wear a mask in public. Like that's where the country is. So, I mean, it's not a surprise that you're going to have some of those same differences of opinion in baseball in terms of players and what they feel like they need to do in order to keep themselves safe and their teammates safe. So, This is going to be one of those things that is going to come down to the decision of the individual. But when you're as big as baseball is, and you recognize the implications of, you know, positive tests and how that could be transmitted, you know, throughout teams and throughout your league, you know, one of the things that you've got to make sure that you've got done and ready to go is your testing. And it's clear that's not the case. And I don't understand how they could find themselves in this kind of place months later after they recognize the challenges that will be ahead for them if they were to decide to forward with the 2020 season. That's inexcusable.
Well, here's the thing, though, too, Chris and Dave. It's not only one team. I mean, you have the Nationals, and they're shutting it down because they don't have their results. You got the A's, who their tests are stuck in San Francisco. They're still waiting for the results of their tests, or to actually to get the test to the lab. You have the Angels, who had to test themselves because their testers didn't show up. And apparently Ken Rosenthal is saying it's not just the Angels. It's two other identified teams, too, where the testers did not show up. So, I mean, what are we doing here?
No, it's embarrassing, to be honest.
They're not doing anything. That's the problem. Yeah.
But how are you supposed to be a major league player and have some semblance of intelligence and see the disaster that the testing is undergoing right now and feel, you know what, I'm in safe hands. I'm fine. I feel comfortable playing baseball right now.
No, you can't. More importantly, I mean, that's how – that for me would be the biggest fear with all these sports, is that either it's a false negative or, you know, the person just got it and then it's not showing up on the test for 2 days and that guy is just walking around the locker room. And that's how it's going to go like wildfire through a locker room. I mean, that's what this thing is setting up to be right now. I mean, the fact that Sean Doolittle gets tested on a Friday, is allowed to work out, and still doesn't have the results, that's exactly how you wipe out an entire team. And we're, what, 2 weeks away from the season starting?
Yeah. Today's, what, the 6th? And we're talking about starting on the 23rd, so 2.5 weeks away.
So what happens if one of these teams just gets wiped out a week from now?
I don't know.
I don't think I have an answer, Rick. I don't know. Which is why they allowed, you know, for teams to have the 60-man roster report to summer training to get ready for this thing, just because you don't know who's going to be available, who's not going to be available due to the virus. Like, you have no idea.
It's just such a bad look.
But,
I mean, it really is.
But,
no, don't you think it's a bad look?
It's a terrible look. I mean, you spend months and months arguing over money with the players when you should have been more concerned with the health and safety protocols. And I guess – You can put it on the owners. You can put it on the players. Both have a part to play in making sure that this process was as streamlined as it possibly could be. Because from the outset of this, we talked about the need for rapid, reliable testing. When you're talking about not getting your results from 48 to 72 hours, that's not rapid. That's not, you know, you have to be able to respond quickly, because if you do have somebody that has it on the team, you got to do your best to isolate that player so that individual doesn't transmit it to the rest of the team, the rest of the people participating in the startup. So I just, to me, that's the part of it that baseball, I don't know how they could mess that up, because everybody's looking for it. I mean, there's a heightened sense of urgency in terms of making sure that you're not transmitting this virus to other people. Everybody in the country is looking forward to live team sports coming back. You knew you were going to be in the middle of this conversation when it comes to COVID-19. So to not have this part of it taken care of, it's egregious.
Well, I feel like with the other sports too, I mean, NHL, NBA going into the bubble. So you're doing all the testing now and everything else. You start training camp. So I mean, what you're trying to do is make sure the NBA, when it's the next couple of days, are going to go down to Orlando. So you're going to see a bunch of positive tests. You know, those guys will be isolated and everything else. You're trying to make sure that when you get to the bubble with the testing protocols and everything else, everyone that gets into the bubble is negative. Mm-hmm. So the bubble is an actual bubble. Same thing with the NHL. I mean, the way they're handling this testing is that they don't have enough time to be fat-handed with the testing right now. If you're allowing guys to just walk around a clubhouse, I don't care how much social distancing you're doing, you don't have masks on the entire time, and they don't have their results back. I mean, that's... You're setting yourself up for failure. That's how you're going to wipe out an entire team.
Yep. And then what do you do?
There's not enough time. You only have 2 weeks. That's how long. If you wipe out a team, it's going to take at least 2 weeks to get the guys back.
Well, you don't have any margin for error, though, Rick, just because you're playing, what, 60 games in 66 days?
Yep.
So if you're talking about a team that's an organization that's not able to field a team at any point throughout the regular season, then, I mean, what does that do in terms of the integrity of that season? It's gone. It's completely gone.
Completely gone. So I mean, and on top of that, too, I mean, you got Freddie Freeman, who's one of the most, I mean, he's one of the best players in baseball.
Yep.
And you've heard his story. And that's got to scare the hell out of players.
You see what Brian Snitker said? He said, it's going to be a long time before we see him back in the Braves lineup.
Well, that's got to scare the hell out of you. I mean, outside of him, everyone seems to have dealt with it fine. But you're talking about a guy, well-conditioned athlete, great
but
shape.
That's the thing, Rick. The one outlier. If 100 guys get it, 99 are fine, and you have one guy who gets really sick, and God forbid, you know, the unthinkable happens. Then what happens? That's the terrifying thought.
But Dave, they're only making it worse because all of a sudden you see what Freddie Freeman is dealing with, right? His wife says he's never sick, and this thing has just completely shut him down. So, okay, antennas are up. If it can happen to him, it can happen to me. And on top of it now, you don't trust the testing that they're keeping you safe? I mean, if you're a baseball player, you're saying, well, I mean, is this worth this? Because I could be Freddie Freeman. God forbid I'm Freddie Freeman, or worse. And I don't trust the testing protocols that there's guys that my teammates aren't walking around, you know, with it. And we don't know because we can't get first of all, we can't get testers to show up. And second of all, we can't get the results back.
Right. I mean, three days later.
Those seem like two things that should be controllable for major league clubs. Like, that should be something that you can take care of. That shouldn't be something that's overly complicated. That's what I can't understand. Why is that not in place? It's not like you didn't know that this was coming at some point. You had time to prepare for this.
Could you imagine, though? Just think about this, Chris. Could you imagine you spent this whole time arguing about money, right? We want full prorated. We're taking on all the risk and everything else. Finally, you get to the 60 games. You're not happy about it. You show up, and you're the Los Angeles Angels. And you're like, okay, ready for the testing? Guys, kind of a problem. A little bit. There's no testers here, so we're going to have to do – you guys are going to have to test yourselves.
But that just goes to show you, man. Owners are not – they don't care about the health and safety of the players. And I'm not just saying baseball owners. I mean sports owners in general. They do not care about the well-being of the athletes. They care about what's in the best interest of the bottom line and making sure that they control the narrative when it comes to public perception around how they feel about the players. But they don't really care about the players, because if you did, that would be something that's already in place.
Of course. This is embarrassing for baseball. And I will say this, I can't imagine a worse 5-day start to what we have to the season than what we've had from July 1 till today.
Well, Dave, it goes back to what Buster Olney was saying last week, right? I mean, a lot of executives around baseball feel like it's an exercise in futility. Like it's fake hustle. They might start it, but they're not actually going to be able to finish it. I mean, doesn't it feel like we're going down that road?
It sure does. And you say they may start it. I mean, do you feel like they may start it now? It doesn't feel like that to me. And we still have 2.5 weeks to go until we start the season.
Well, I'm still choosing to be optimistic, Dave, even though I've been really the pessimist throughout this whole process. I still want to be optimistic just because I want to see baseball.
Of course we do.
Like, I'm excited to watch Yankees practice on tonight at 6 p.m. Like, why am I excited about a practice where J-Hap and Clark Schmidt are pitching in a simulated game?
Because you haven't watched sports in 4 months.
But exactly. But I want it, Dave.
Yeah.
As ugly as everything that has been happening around baseball the last couple of months has been, I want to watch it. So I want to be optimistic about them being able to pull it off. And I do recognize there's a little bit of a curve when it comes to trying to implement any new process. But, I mean, this is just one of those things that baseball should have made sure was in place when their players were ready to return. And the fact that they dropped the ball on this one, I can't understand that. I can't wrap my mind around that.
All right, let's get to some of the callers. 800-919-3776. We'll do hockey, that hockey thing at 11 o'clock with Greg Wyshynski. It's not so easy to say.
Yes. Of the whole name, of that entire name, Greg would not have been the part of that name I think you would have struggled with.
Anyway, he'll join us at 11 o'clock this morning. Andy from Merrick will join us at 10:53 to give us his trivia of the day. 11:30 CMT, 12:30 observation. So a lot going on. Let's go to Spike in Jersey. Got that right. Spike, you're first up on 98.7.
Again, and I hope your fellas, my friends, had a wonderful weekend. It sounds very refreshed. I'm going to give you some perspective. I have the Center for Disease Control 24/7 on my computer and phone. And you guys can all relate to this. So when we were a kid, I was a kid a long time ago, I couldn't wait to crack open the paper and see the box score. Well, this is the reverse. So I cracked open the thing, if the phone got me, I went up in the morning. You and Chris and Rick, and I look at it, and I see 52,200 new cases, the deaths are going down, the youngsters are getting it. My point with all this is no one knows what the hell they're doing. This is what I'm surmising. And like Chris said, he's been pessimistic. I think I've been more realist. I think they should have waited. We know it's all bottom line. Until the end of this year, I know money makes the train run, but let's get everything cleared up. I can't say what I want to say. Oh, you'll knock me off the radio, the word I want to use, but it's so poorly done. When you see Trout and the other, what's his name, the pitcher, the other guy, all these name players, what's the difference if it's a name player or if it's some scrub, if they get sick and succumb to this? Does it really make a difference?
No, it doesn't. It's only going to take one. It's only going to take one player to end up on a ventilator for it to just have to shut down, because the players will say, we can't trust the process and we don't want to be that guy.
Well, you said it before, Rick. The testing, this is one of the greatest country in the world medically-wise, and you've got to wait for a test. First, there was a saliva test. Everyone's in this rush to get the sports back on when there are other issues in this country. I'm not going down that road. They're all important. Every issue is important. But this is, I can't believe how poorly handled this is. We're trying to get down and move to Florida. And I can't even go down there because I have to, you get quarantined and then asymptomatic cases. You don't even know if someone has it. And there's so many false negatives. I'm just, listen, I love you guys and love the station and love to talk sports, but I'm so confused now and I'm so embarrassed that the medical community has no freaking idea of what they're doing or conspiracy theory. It's worse than we know and they're not telling us. That's what I'm hoping I'm wrong. So let's get back on the right track and have a couple of laughs today. And again, just hang in there. I don't know what to do. Maybe you can help me out.
Yeah, Spike, I mean, listen, man, and we appreciate the phone call. We all feel the exact same way, right? I mean, we want sports, but it's very strange and it feels very uncomfortable. And I understand the line of thinking, Chris, of, let's just wait until this thing is over. But we don't know when that's going to be. We don't know when this thing is going to be over.
We have no idea when it's going to be over, Dave. But I think that when you start to listen to some of the medical experts and their optimism around when there can be more treatments on the marketplace or, fingers crossed, a vaccine on the marketplace, I think that if you try to give yourself as much time to allow that to be the case, then I think that, you feel better about returning to live team sports. Again, nobody has a crystal ball. We don't know when those things are going to happen. So you're trying to figure out a path forward. But I guess everybody would agree that a path forward would have to involve being able to have rapid, reliable testing. And to not have that in place as you're trying to get to this ramp up to the beginning of the regular season, I just think that's the part of it that doesn't make sense to me if you're Major League Baseball. How could you not have this critical piece of it nailed down before you start allowing players to return to facilities?
See, that's what's amazing to me. I know we have people call in and we start talking about money and everything else. You have someone call in and say, for that much money, I would do anything. And it's not apples to apples, right? I mean, the expectation is these are professional athletes. This is, these are, billion-dollar corporations. Like, they're going to get different treatment than everyone else. They're going to have the best of the best, tests available. Like, whatever they need, they'll have. And then, all of a sudden, we're in a situation with Major League Baseball where you had to realize going in there's going to be some trepidation from the players anyway, right? They're a little bit nervous, hesitant, who knows what's going on. And then to have this all of a sudden, this is how you roll it out to the players? Yeah. This is how you introduce it
right.
to the
you
players?
You think it would be buttoned up more than anything's ever been buttoned up before in the history of medical testing?
At least to start. At least to start. And then, as you kind of get your bearings, maybe it's not as intense. But from the beginning, you would imagine it's going to be, every single thing that needed to be done would be done from the get-go just to make the players feel safe. And to have it like this, we have multiple teams, it's embarrassing.
It's awful.
I don't understand how that happens, especially after you spend all this time arguing over money. You finally get, I don't even want to call it an agreement. You finally just come to terms where they're going to be a season, and this is how you're going to start. It's brutal.
It doesn't feel like there's anything that Major League Baseball can do to restore the confidence of the players that they're doing everything that they can to keep them safe. Like once you have something like this happen at the beginning of it, it's just like, okay, I don't know that there's anything that can be done where the players would say, oh, now I feel a lot safer. just because of how they allowed the guys to come back to the facilities and not having the results of all the players that were participating in practices over the weekend. Like, that's the part of it that I don't know that you can ever make the players feel good about. And so does that lead to more guys opting out, more of the guys that the fans actually want to see? I would probably say probably, Dave. I would lean toward probably.
Yeah. Look, you have the biggest name in all of baseball who says he's just not sure what he's going to do. I understand the Yankee fans laugh at David Price, but David Price is a big name pitcher and a top two or three starter on maybe the best team in baseball. He's now done. I mean, this is not the 25th guy on the roster, guys. These are big name players that are either not playing or considering not playing.
Yeah, but here's the point though, Dave, is that Major League Baseball, and we said this the entire time. We had Buster on. It didn't matter who we had on. In order to make this work, it was going to have to be a collaboration between the players and the teams. Major League Baseball had to recognize that going in, that there were going to be plenty of players that were nervous about this, that didn't want to risk their long-term. Like, again, because it goes back to we don't have enough answers to these questions. So there was going to be hesitancy to begin with. And it was your job to make sure you make them feel comfortable that you're doing everything in your power to keep them healthy, keep them safe. And that's the opposite of what you've done so far.
But you know what, Rick? You said something at the beginning of this. You said when Tony Clark came out and responded to the owners talking about money, that was the worst mistake the MLBPA could have made. And you were talking about just what happens in the court of public opinion and perception of where the players are at. But the reality is, the players should have been more concerned about the health and safety protocols and how they were going to be implemented. Because if you did have more concern about this, then the situation that we saw play out over the course of the weekend with several clubs would not be the case. That would not have happened. It was clear to me that both sides were too focused on money and not paying enough attention to what got everybody into this mess, which is the actual coronavirus. That was the real enemy. And yet they chose serial toward one another. You're right. They didn't collaborate. They didn't work together. And that's what opens the door to something like this happening. And we just hope that it doesn't lead to something that could be much, much worse.
It's a bad start. It's a real, real bad start. 800-919-3776. We'll get to your calls. You know what we got coming up. We got Andy from Merrick with his trivia later this hour. We've got Greg Wyshynski, beautifully said, at the top of the 11 o'clock hour.
Dave, you know what?
What?
Before we go to break, you know what happens, though, is you're only confirming what the players thought. By having this be so, such a mess, you're only confirming. Like Chris just said it. I mean, and that's someone that's not even, a part of Major League Baseball, one of these players, is... You get down there. If you're on the Angels right now and you got me, I'm saliva testing myself. You're probably going to yourself, they could care less about our safety.
But did you ever? I never thought they really did.
No, I didn't. No, I think we all realize that. But at least fake it. At least at the beginning, fake it. Like at least pretend like you're worried about us. And then to have a turnout like this, where you got multiple teams where the testers don't show up. I mean, 72 hours, you got no results yet.
It's awful. There's nothing more to say. This is the worst start you could possibly have if you're a Major League Baseball. Now, today on ESPN Daily, chess grandmasters train just like other elite athletes. The top players work out several hours a day to prepare for matches that go on forever and burn thousands of calories. Extreme chess training on ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcast. It's extreme.
It's extreme.
It's extreme.
I would probably watch it at this point.
You would watch long battles of chess?
Extreme chess?
No, you would not. No,
I would
not. Knight to bishop 3, you'd be like, oh my God, Milo!
I mean, I'm watching cornhole and everything else. Just put it on, just add it to the list, Dave. Add it to the list.
Those cornhole players, by the way.
Did you see that one guy?
I didn't see it, but these guys are unbelievable.
No. It was actually the championship match. He went in the game leading into the final match. He went 19 of 20, was perfect all the way through the final game, made this ridiculous shot too. We're like, I don't know if there's enough room for him to sink this, sinks it. So he goes, ends up missing one, misses his last one. So he went 19 of 20 and 19 of 20.
Oh, my God.
38 of 40. It's crazy.
That is incredible.
It's incredible.
Did you watch the hot dog eating this weekend at all?
I watched the minute. I couldn't do it.
I gotta tell you, it's too much. It's really repulsive, Chris, isn't it?
Yeah, I can't do it, Dave. I can't do it. It makes me have a gag just watching those guys do that.
Because they're gagging, eating them.
I can't do it.
What did he eat? He ate 75 hot dogs?
75. Yeah, two new records, yeah. Men's and women's records.
Yeah,
it's disgusting.
Yeah, the gyrations and I just, it's too, it's not even enjoyable.
Don't dunk them in water.
I don't need that.
Bun all over the face. It's, oh.
You know, then they squeeze, they dip the bun and they squeeze it in their hand and then they just, oh, it's too much. Yeah,
come
it's
on,
too
man.
Much. It's too much. I can't take it.
75. I mean, there's something just, that feels like the Cal Ripken record, right? I mean, how can you break 75 hot dogs in 10 minutes?
The biggest question is, why would you want to break that record?
I don't know.
No, yeah. You're missing, here's the question. Now, I'll keep saying this. If in practice, knowing you're going up against Joey Chestnut, if in practice you can't even get close to 70 hot dogs, why even participate? Well, what are you eating? What are you going to eat 48, 50 hot dogs for in the men's division if you're going to get blown out by 25?
I don't know. Maybe to come in second?
For what? For what?
I don't. But I mean, if he doesn't, if he gets sick, if he pulls a muscle, if he throws up, right? He's disqualified. Are you telling me he couldn't pull a neck muscle?
I guess. Jaw could cramp up midway through, I guess.
Right? Lockjaw? Something could happen.
I guess so.
Wow.
It's too much, man. I tried. I gave it a minute. And I think he was 15 hot dogs in the first minute. And I was like, I just can't. It's too much.
I don't think there's anything that I love that much where I would eat it like that.
No.
I could name one thing.
Oh, God. Let's go to Nick in Peconic. Nick is ready to roll here. Nick, you're on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
How are you, Nick?
I just wanted to go back to the Tanaka thing. I had a similar experience in college where I was playing shortstop. Our pitcher, very similar to the Tanaka thing, where our pitcher just got drilled in the side of the head. The ball went straight up in the air in play. And my first reaction, I don't even know what this says about me or what anybody else.
You caught it, didn't you?
No. The second baseman caught it. Our catcher actually said, catch the ball. So our second baseman caught it. My reaction was put my head down and squat like I couldn't even look, like just like Stanton. And I don't even think that the kid who hit it stayed in the box. He didn't even take a step towards first base. And, you know, unfortunately, our pitcher, for him, he had, he ended up having a fractured skull. Oh, and he ended up having some more complications from that down the road. But he's fine now. But, it's pretty scary. And for Tanaka to only walk away with a mild concussion, it seems pretty unbelievable. You know, like our pitcher wasn't getting hit with 112 mile per hour fastball from Giancarlo Stanton. These are, you know, college kids. You know, the ball was hit pretty hard, but it's not even comparable. And for Tanaka to only get a concussion is pretty crazy.
Yeah, sometimes you're just lucky.
Getting hit in the head with a baseball, period, sounds painful, even if it's not 112 miles per hour off the bat.
Well, that's where you get hit, too. And it's going to be where you get hit. I mean, lucky for him, I mean, he must have moved just enough to have it take it off the side of the head as opposed to the temple. But he's so lucky. I mean, every injury is like that, though. I mean, look at Pat Mahomes dislocating his kneecap.
Right.
I mean, you thought when you saw that, like, oh, he's done. He's done. And he came back and played, in that season. Then you have, Teddy Bridgewater dislocates his kneecap and he almost dies. Almost loses his leg.
You're right.
You never know, man.
How many injuries that you've heard, the doctor will say, if it was a quarter of a millimeter to the left, it would have severed this or this would have been broken. You're right.
Dave, correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't one of the Bears tight ends a few years ago have an injury happen to him in New Orleans?
Yes. They were talking about amputating the leg, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you just never know. I mean, that's the unpredictability of sports, especially sports at a really high level. So when you start talking about the best athletes in the world playing this game, I mean, things like what happened this weekend to Tanaka can happen. Like, it's possible, which is why it makes it dangerous when you don't have a proper spring training, when you're going through this shortened ramp-up period and you're trying to do your best as a manager and as an organization to get your guys ready to go. You're doing live competition out of the gate. And this is one of the things that can happen when you have, pitching against live hitters. It's one of those things, Dave. I mean, if you're not used to it, if you're not used to reacting as quickly, you might not be in a position to be able to defend yourself, to get yourself out of harm's way.
But I don't think you can ever defend yourself from that. Like you
no,
could
you
be.
No, you can't. You might not be able to, Dave, but who's to say whether he would have been able to do it, you know, quicker or move out of the way of it a little sooner, you know, 2-3 weeks from now? Like, we'll never know. We'll never be able to prove that. All I'm saying is you have a better chance at it if it's not your first go at it. Like, that's why a lot of the big injuries that you see during the football season happen early on in training camp. Because guys are getting acclimated to, you know, the movements that pertain to playing that game. You know, with football, with basketball, all those different things. Like, when you're doing your off-season training, it's a very different thing than when you start talking about going out there and playing against other guys, playing actual games in game situations. And I just feel like what happened this weekend, it could be in part due to the fact that, you know, this is live competition early on after, you know, months of relatively being inactive.
That Bears tight end was, by the way, that was Zach Miller.
Right.
But did he play after that injury?
No, I think he was.
I don't think he played after that.
I mean, he had to have multiple surgeries to save his leg. But I think to Chris's point, and just in general, when you see something like that happen to Tanaka, and who knows if, you know, there was a regular, you know, spring training and everything else, if he gets out of the way, who knows? Here's what I'll say, is that there's enough risk as a player you take on in any sport you play. And now on top of it, you're bringing in COVID into the mix. Like, you know, going in, there's going to be certain risks. Now, all of a sudden, you add COVID-19 to the mix and have baseball handle it the way they've handled it so far.
Yep.
I mean, you're not setting yourself up to have much success. Because at a certain point, if this continues.
How can players have any belief in your league if this is the way you get out on jump?
Well, you can't, because there's a lot of players.
At all?
But Dave, I mean, just take it to what we do, right? Like, we haven't been in studio. So if all of a sudden now, whenever the date is, they say, okay, you can come back in the studio. We're going to make sure that we take care, you know, of the health concerns and everything else. You'll be nervous going in. And then if you go in and, you know, the testers don't show up, or you're testing yourself, or there is no test, or you're in there on a Monday, get tested, you don't have your results till a Thursday,
right?
And you've been able to work the entire time. You're going to go to yourself, you're going to say to yourself, this isn't worth it.
No. Or if you walk into the elevator and they're like, you know, no minimum in the elevator, pile 10, 12 people in there is fine. Like, I expect precautions to be taken.
Yeah, and right now, baseball is not doing it. They're not doing a very good job of that. No.
None of it. Let's go to Kevin in Oakland. Kevin, you're next up on 98.7.
Fellas, how you doing?
Hey, Kevin. How you doing?
Good. Question for Rick and Chris. Rick, how come the NHL, you know, moving forward, they're not having everybody wear like a full eye tech or the full, you know, face mask shield? And same with football, Chris. How come, you know, they're not extending the shield, you know, just from the eye area, you know, even making it lower so it covers the mouth area? This way it at least would, you know, maybe keep some exposure down to a minimum.
Well, I can speak to hockey. I mean, that would be something that's collectively bargained, and players would have to make a decision to do that or not. I think there may be some that do it, but the assumption is that everyone inside of these hubs with the NHL will have already tested negative.
Right.
Yeah, when it comes to football, I think it'll be a lot harder for the athletes to actually go out there and do their jobs if you extended the face shield and went all the way down and covered the mouth area. But even with that being said, you're not going to completely eliminate guys sweating on each other, bleeding on each other, that type of thing. So, I mean, it's you know, when it comes to football, I think out of all of the major team sports, this is going to be the hardest one to pull off just because of the nature of the game. Being in proximity to guys over the course of 3 hours, it's going to be hard if you have somebody that's infected with COVID to not allow that player to transmit it to the rest of the players that are on the field, which is why when it comes to football, they've got to be creative in terms of trying to create a bubble-like atmosphere when they talk about guys going on the practice field or going on the game field.
I will say this about baseball, though. I mean, it's no wearing a mask. It's not ideal. I mean, I went to the grocery store. It's not ideal. I get it, but I mean, it's not. How much different is it when it's cold out and you see the guys wearing those things on their faces, covering their nose and mouth when it's cold out?
Yeah.
I mean, baseball could probably
about wearing a glass face shield as opposed to one of those.
No, I'm saying baseball players. You know when it's cold out, they have the
thing that goes over the
Neck scarves that go up over their nose and mouth.
Yep.
Yeah.
I can see that being doable for baseball. I don't know about football. I mean, that helmet's uncomfortable as it is, and then all of a sudden, I mean, that Chris, you used to wear the mask. That thing fogs up.
You cannot breathe in that visor, and that's only covering a part of it. If you tried to have a visor that covered the entire face mask, guys would not be able to breathe. But still, Rick, that doesn't solve the problem when it comes to sweating and bleeding and spitting on guys. Like, that just happens. When you get hit in football, guess what's going to happen? Stuff is going to come flying out. That's what it is. Like, they got the term knock the snot out of a guy for a reason. Because that actually happens.
Like the hot dog eating contest.
Well, here's the thing. And in football games, helmets come off. Like you're supposed to stop the game when a helmet comes off, but that doesn't always happen in real time. So, I mean, again, I hear everybody coming up with the different innovations on how to keep football players safe. But the only real way you're going to be able to pull that off is if you make sure that everybody that's competing, whether it's practices or games, doesn't have COVID.
Correct.
It's the only way you can do it.
If it's COVID-free, you have a chance. If there's someone that's penetrated that bubble or whatever you're going to have if you're the NFL, it feels like you're doomed, to be honest with you.
Yeah, which is why they're exploring now having 80-man rosters, Dave. We'll see what happens. But, I mean, they're going to have to – a part of the NFL's solution to this problem is going to have to be throwing bodies at this thing. And I hate to phrase it that way. But the reality is that guys are inevitably going to become infected with COVID. You're talking about a season being over 150 days. Yeah, I mean, it's going to happen to somebody. It's just being able to have somebody else that's in place that can step in for that team and do the job. I think that's every reasonable mind would probably agree on that.
Yeah, I think that you're right. The Nationals are not alone, Rick. I don't know if you just saw this. The Houston Astros will not practice today either. They had tests on Friday, and they are still awaiting the results. So baseball continues to make a mockery of this entire situation.
Yeah, it's not great. You're not inspiring much trust from your players at this point.
I just don't understand your baseball. How you could have the test happen on Friday and not have the results on Monday?
Especially because you have a partnership. You have a partnership with the lab.
Yeah, I don't understand.
How about not? I mean, you don't have testers showing up. Yeah, three different teams.
It's embarrassing. This could not have started any worse. All right, let's put us in a positive mindset. Andy and Merrick. Andy, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, DCR. I am glad to report that Sherry let me out of the basement this weekend. So I have some baseball uniform questions for you.
Hang on a second. Baseball uniform questions?
Yes. Uniform numbers.
Oh, okay.
All right. Starting with 99.
All right. I'm ready.
Joe Torre wore number 6 during his Yankee tenure, since been retired. Can you tell me the last Yankee to wear number 6 prior to Torre?
Wow, that's a tough one. I'm going to have to phone a friend. Dave Rothenberg, need your help on this one.
Was he a middle infielder?
He was a middle infielder.
Mm-hmm. At one time, he was not great with the Yankees?
He played less than a year with the Yankees. Actually, did a short stint with the Mets also.
Did he play for the Cincinnati Reds?
Short stint with the Reds.
Mm-hmm.
I think you have this, huh?
I think so. Chris, I'm trying to think. Was he on the championship team?
For which team?
Was he on a Yankees championship team?
No, he was there.
Was he there before they won?
What's
right
that?
Right before they won then.
Correct.
Yeah. Did he play for the Blue Jays for a very long time?
Very long time.
Yeah, I know. All right, I know who it is. I don't know how to help you, Chris, other than just go ahead and say it, Dave, because I don't know.
Is it
Tony Fernandez?
That would be correct.
Nice, David.
Thank you, Dave. Dave for the save. Okay. Appreciate you, brother.
I got you.
All right, 39. I have a number 39 question for you. Mm-hmm. Edwin Diaz currently wears it for the New York Mets. Can you tell me which Met wore number 39 for the most seasons?
Oh, Met to wear the number 39 for the most seasons.
Was he a reliever?
Reliever, and not long ago.
Mm-hmm. reliever not long ago. Is this another one Dave knows?
I think so. Very mediocre.
Come on, Rick, you got this.
Very mediocre reliever, yes?
Mediocre is kind.
Yeah.
Wow. Mediocre is kind. Dave, give me a hint. I'm struggling here. Give me a hint. Why are you so bad with hints? Give me.
I don't know. I mean, what am right, I,
he's, he knows all of them.
He's a righty reliever.
Played from 2008 to 2015.
2008 to 2015.
There was some thought he'd be the closer at one point, but
yeah, I think he was an eighth inning guy, and the way that he has good stuff, but he's never that guy.
Oh, I know who this is. I know who this is now.
Help him out, Chris.
I know who this is now. Is it Blevins?
No, he's Blevins was right after this reliever we're talking about. Blevins did wear 39.
I mean, Andy, am I missing a hint to give him here? I don't know what else there is to say.
I'm not sure there's much more about this guy's.
I mean, this is not exactly
career.
A very descript player, Rick. That I have a lot of statistical information on him.
But Dave, you say it. I'm not going to get it.
I think it's Bobby Parnell.
That would be correct.
Nice, Dave.
Nice, Dave.
All right, Dave. Staying with the Mets, who is the only player to don number 99, Chris Canty's uniform number?
Turk Wendell.
Oh, wow, that didn't take long.
It's unbelievable. Dave's unbelievable.
All right, bonus question for the three of you. Dave, maybe you sit this one out.
Maybe I do.
All right, number 42 was last worn by what New York Met player?
Was he a Husky fellow?
Mo Vaughn?
Mo Vaughn is correct. Nice. Safety
there
Pietro.
You go,
there
Ricky.
You go.
All right, boys. Have a good one. Stay healthy.
Nice. A little 4-for-4 action there.
No, we were, Chris and I were 1-for-1. You were 3-for-3.
Exactly.
We're a team. I don't understand. I look at us as one show unit. So if one of us does well, we all do well.
I appreciate that. I mean, you're definitely the strongest link of this show unit. That's
you know,
crazy.
You knocked
that, you know,
the Mo
like
Vaughn
that.
Right out of the park.
Yeah, which is, listen, I'll take it as a win. But the reality is that Bobby Parnell, I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah, I don't know how he.
I don't know how your brain works like that. I don't have enough
because
room
I don't.
In my brain.
I don't fill it with anything else. Like yeah, most Chris people, that you know, you have like other thoughts and ideas, and oh, you know, I could make a creme brulee by doing this. I don't have that.
But it's like, I have to take like I only have a certain amount of years I can remember, and then I have to get rid of those. The earlier years to make more room
to reinvent the Rolodex, of course.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it's like I'm trying to do with my sleep. I'm trying to add. You know, add on to the sleep.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, no, I see what you're going to do, but I don't think that's going to work.
The sleep reserve.
I don't think there's such a thing as sleep.
I think
reserve.
I'm going to prove there is.
Okay. We get a sleep specialist on that would deny that every day of the week. If you sleep extra time now, then in a month you can sleep less time and not feel tired.
I feel like that's possible. Yeah,
it doesn't work. Have you ever been on vacation? Where you go away for a week and you sleep like tons of time and then the trip back is so stressful and you don't sleep the night you get back and then you start work the next day and you're already exhausted.
Yeah, but why? I don't understand why you're trying to burst my bubble here.
I'm trying to be realistic.
Yeah, but I'm not choosing to be realistic.
Okay, reserve your sleep. We'll see how it goes. I hope the best for you. Let's take a break. Greg Wyshynski will give us the latest on where we are with the NHL.
I'm going to hack into the sleep database.
You know, I don't know if you heard Canty call you out.
You're not hacking into anything.
At the start of our show today, I say he's having some connection issues, and he goes, I thought he's some super hacker now. I guess that's not true, huh?
You can call me Buddy Hackett. I was hacking all over the place. It wasn't my fault that the internet was down. I can't hack into...
Well, why not?
There's nothing I could do there. I'm great in the Comrex. I'm all over the place. I'm opening up apps, everything.
I'm all over the place.
I was all over the web. Just wasn't. It wasn't responding.
You are too
changing
much.
Changing IP addresses.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.